Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. I bicycle to a mall. I normally don't eat at the mall. I just bicycle there for exercise and to look at people. To gape at the fools of Marin County, to see boys being raised as girls, to see girls being raised as boys, to see children being raised to have their throats cut as the enemy raises their children to kill and cut throats. We raise our children to be sensitive and compassionate. So you see little boys walking around like girls with long hair, practically swishing at age 7, with the mother approving of the little girl she's raising in a boy's body. I don't say anything, I just watch. I'm merely an observer. And I wonder, where are we going to get a generation of men who can shoot guns and kill them before they kill us? I don't know. They're going to come out of the middle. I don't know where they're going to come. So then I was hungry. I didn't want to go home and make a tuna fish sandwich before going to the radio station. So I go into this French cafe. Now, you understand that I made a mistake going in. It's been there for 2 years. I've never eaten there. I wasn't in the mood for a meal. I figured I'd have a salad. So I figured it's a bistro French, but I knew it was going to be bad. I go in right away. I said, give me the French onion soup. Is it ready? Yes, the Mexican says. I said, all right, give me a salad. Is it ready? 2 minutes. I'm outside. 10 minutes, nothing. I go in with my number. I said, hey, I said I have to go to work. Trabajo, work. Where's the onion soup? Oh, it's coming, senor. I said, if it doesn't come now, give me my money back. I got to go to work. So then they bring me the soup. Need I tell you what they do to cheat people? French onion soup, the broth, must cost 1 cent per cup, if it costs that. The bowl, which was $4.99, had bread in it, some cheese, and 1 spoon of broth at the bottom of the bread. So I said, I can't believe this. I just can't believe they would do this to people. And I'm hungry. I mean, it wasn't the money. I called for the manager, who was a white guy, a skinny French twerp. And I said, do you manage this restaurant? I said, nicely, yes, sir. I said, look, there was a spoon of broth. You see, you picked the bread up. There's nothing there. Yes, sir. I said, don't put any more bread in there. Just give me broth. He brings it back. He says, I refilled your bowl. I look in it again. Full of bread. I pull the bread out. There's 2 spoons of broth. You know what I did? I ate it and left. Because that's what it is. But what do you expect from the French, particularly French in Marin County, California, who know they can get away with murder because the people are like their sons. The people are like their sons, living in a bubble of stupidity. Not understanding the danger they are in. Not comprehending that the little psychotic Hitler of Iran will kill them all unless he is killed first. Not comprehending that radical Islam is here. It is near. It is everywhere. Not comprehending that the radical right wing, as expressed by Michael Savage, is their best friend. Not comprehending a damn thing about reality. Living in a dream world. Not comprehending the danger they are in. I said to myself as I left.
Savage.
Newspapers trim workforces as advertising slows. Again, the big lie. See, this is what I notice. The Republicans are dying as a party, and they don't know why. The Democrats have died as a party, and they don't know why. The newspapers are dying as an institution in America, and they lie to themselves. They say it's advertising is slowing down. And they don't even understand why people have stopped buying the newspaper. And they start, now they hire consultants. One schmuck says, Anytime you reduce the staffing of a journalistic enterprise, it's inevitable you're going to lower the quantity and quality of the journalistic product. Okay. So they're all blaming it on a reduction in advertising. And so they're firing people through buyouts. But why is it that New York Times shares have fallen by 17% so far this year? Why is it that Wall Street has hit newspaper stocks very heavily? The answer is not so much because advertising has slowed down as they are lying to themselves about. It is because they are attacking America. They are attacking the family. They are attacking the culture. They are attacking the war. They are attacking the soldiers. They're attacking the flag. They're attacking the church. They're attacking Israel on a daily basis. And so the people who normally buy newspapers and said, I'm fed up with it, a pox upon your house, I'm not buying it anymore. I don't want to see this rubbish. They don't buy it. Of course, the internet has come along. Of course, advertising down a little. But doesn't matter. People would still buy the newspaper if they saw a modicum of anything they believed in there. Nothing. Nothing. Everything is negative about America and about the family. And there's nothing patriotic because you have a whole generation of despoiled writers for these scribblers for the newspapers who have come out of bent out of shape from these schools of journalism. I know who runs them. And what do you expect? It's sad. They're not bad people. They're just misled. And they couldn't get any other profession. They couldn't make it as a dentist or an accordionist. So they figured they'll do journalism. That you can get through on pot no matter what you're on. A little rehab along the way. Let's say in the third year you drop out for a year and a half in a rehab clinic. You could still get a degree in journalism. It would tend to diminish your capacity to become a surgeon, but it wouldn't interfere with your desire to become a journalist. In fact, it might increase your chances of getting hired by the Detroit Free Press if you spent a year in rehab. If you spent 2 years in rehab, I guarantee you the New York Times takes you on right out of rehab. They may even look for their next Johnny newsboy in the rehab clinics, now that I think about it. That could be the place where they're recruiting them.
Savage.
I think I'll tell you about my car, the Sadist. We've gone from Herbie the Love Bug to Herman the Sadmobile in a very few generations here. Today I get it back from the dealer, and the LED comes on and says that I have a flat tire. So I stop the car. I get out of the car. I'm on the roadside, and I'm sweating. I just got showered, ready to go to the radio station. I go around. There's no flat tire. I go back in. You can't turn off the thing. It's an exclamation point. It says, you have a flat tire. Now, I just came back from the dealer. Why? Because I had it towed out of the driveway like a week ago. I don't know when, because the key wouldn't go into the slot. It kept coming out saying, ha, ha, ha. I'd push in the electronic key, and it would come out. No matter what I did, I push it in, it pushed out. I push it in, it pushes out. I thought I heard like a mocking laugh in the background going, ha, 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 but I could be imagining it. So the car dies in the driveway. I have to call a dealer. They tow it away. This is a brand-new expensive car with a crazy, sadistic computer drive in the middle that nobody can work, nobody. For a year, I couldn't get the radio to work. Now I can't program the radio. It's all crack music on FM. They get a driver who sends it over. They know how to work it. Every station is, I'm going to drop my pants, and I'm going to hit the cup, I'm going to break the girl, and hit the back. I'm going to do it. Every station that I turn on is another variance of illiteracy and anti-American degeneracy. So I try to put it on to AM manual. I almost get a station I could listen to. Bingo, it's right back down. I'm going to bang the thing, I'm going to break your head. I couldn't believe it, so I turn it off, so I have no radio in the car. You turn the heater on, the seat moves. You turn the windshield wipers on, you get sprayed in the eye if the window is open. Gorgeous car, great road car. The best road car I ever owned. The problem is you can't work the radio, you can't work the heater, you can't work the seat. And now my car, the Sadist, tells me that I have a flat tire when I don't. The navigation system, you could turn the car over trying to see it. You need a magnifying glass while you're driving. You ever try to program a nav system in a car while you're moving? Any one of them is no good. But this is the worst of any car I ever owned. Bar none, I've never seen anything like it. And they have another sadistic element to this navigation system that I must tell you about. It's a trick. Herman the Sadmobile has a little trick built into the computer chip. Let's say you put the navigation system. First it says, and it says you have to say, I accept. And then you hit the thing. Then something goes on. So then you pull the knob while you're driving and hope you don't run a chicken over. And it goes on to the navigation system if you pull it a certain way and radio the other way. So now I have the map comes up. Now the trick comes up. It gives you six choices when the map comes up. If you hit the wrong choice, a voice starts talking to you that you cannot turn off. It says, go two blocks and turn left. Now, you don't want the instructions, but they keep giving it to you. And there's no way to turn it off unless you stop the car and turn it off. Now, that's if you hit the wrong knob. So I've learned how to bypass that. It's like the whole thing is like an obstacle course. Wonderful car. Gorgeous. Best driving car I ever had. I can't wait till the lease is up so I can give it back. And I may buy like the simplest, most basic, non-technical car if they can still make them. I don't think they can make a car anymore. Now it tells me I have a flat tire. I'm afraid to get in the car. It's liable to give the car flat tires. I left it in the garage at the radio station today because it had no flat tires, but it was still reading flat tire, flat tire, flat tire. So I called the dealer. I said to him, it says I have a flat tire. He says, oh, that's because it reads, if it goes down to 5 pounds below the normal inflation on any tire, it says you have a flat tire. I said, but you just serviced it. Shouldn't they put air in the tire? Now I'm afraid I'll go in the garage and Herman the Sademobile will have given me an automatic flat tire. For all I know, they designed it so that if you don't service a flat tire, they'll give you one just to make sure the computer feels good. What can I tell you? That's the world I live in. I feel like the political cowardice that I'm facing every day is like Herman the Sademobile. It makes no sense. It's like a machine out of control.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
We're living in extraordinary times. The last thing we need is a sourpuss feminist left over from the 60s bringing back the panoply of maniacs like Janet Reno, Madeleine Halfbright, who bombed Serbia for no reason whatsoever, and the other killers and murderers who are under the guise of putting themselves off as some great heroes. Reincarnated before God, they pay for their crimes. In this world, they get away with murder. But I've lived through some historic times in my life. You won't believe this. And here they are. Look what I have seen in my lifetime. I want to show you how long I've been around this planet so you're going to get a feeling of what I've seen in my lifetime. One, Superman defeated by every man in World War II. Two, the first atomic bomb used in warfare. The establishment of the State of Israel. The popularization of television. This is all in my lifetime. The popularization of air conditioning, the popularization of air travel, the popularization of the personal computer, the invention of the internet, the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr. I've seen the first man walk on the moon. I've seen the mainstreaming of homosexuality. I've seen the complete integration of blacks and whites. I've seen the development of mass welfare for unproductive citizens. I've seen the destruction of America's judicial system by corrupt lawyers. I've seen the meltdown of America's borders. I've seen the self-genocide of America's European-American majority through a mass abortion and mass tolerance of diverse sexualities. I've seen the acceptance of narcotics. I've seen the debasement of religion. I've seen the takeover of corporations by gamblers and con men. I've seen the elimination of grades in many schools. I've seen the introduction of racial quota systems. I've seen the impeachment of a president. What will I see in the future? Well, that's for you to decide, not me. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. There are many interesting articles up on my website today, which I hope to get to in the next hour. Now, you think I'm being unfair by talking about the rotten fruit of the rotten guava on the jungle floor of the Hillary Clinton campaign. And make no mistake about it, she's put them in the back right now. She's buried Ann Lewis. Don't come out. Not now. Janet Reno, shut your mouth. Halfbright appeared. They got her right off the stage. How that hag got up there, no one knows. Almost destroyed her in New Hampshire, the hag. Hated throughout America. Hated Albright. Hated a maniac. The minute she wins, if God forbid she wins, all these hags come out from behind the curtain. But wait, hold on. I want to show you how fair I am. Who do you think is coming out to support John McCain? A group of menopausal men are men who pause because their pores lack claws, I wrote. Menopausal men are men who pause because their pores lack claws. Lawrence Eagleburger, George Shultz, Marlon Fitzwater. I swear, I mean, they're not bad people, but we don't need 80-year-olds coming out to support McCain. These are stalwarts from another political era. They all worked for Reagan. God bless them. They're Reagan alumni. Lawrence Eagleburger, George Shultz, Marlon Fitzwater, real household names. Alexander M. Haig Jr. I actually love his work. I think he's a great guy. Margaret Tutwiller, General P.X. Kelly, Dan Coats. These are stalwarts from another political era. They're 93 self-proclaimed Reagan alumni, now insist that Senator John McCain will win. Now, McCain, as you well know, is a Wall Street favorite because he's for open borders. No matter what he says, he's for open borders. He got booed, by the way, recently booed. Once you get the media out of the way and you let the people near him, you'll feel what's going on. You'll really know what's going on. The following former members of the Reagan administration have endorsed McCain. I don't even know who these guys are, so if I read the names, it mean nothing to you. Ralph Benko? Hello? Who is he? I don't know who these people are. I guess they're self-important, important Republicans from another time. I don't recognize any of their names. I don't know who they are. I could read these names. I don't know any of them. Not one name rings a bell. Lawrence Eagleburger, I know. Marlon Fitzwater, I think, invented seltzer. Alexander Haig Jr., I had him on the show about a year ago. He's a great guy. I don't know what he's currently doing, but he's a great man. Retired General P.X. Kelly, I think he invented the soccer ball. Ann Karalogos, oh, that's a real great. I don't know who it is. Carolyn Kuhn, who are these? I don't know who these people are. I'm sorry, Robert C. McFarlane? Didn't he invent the Ford Fairlane? Patricia O'Connor Roberts. She's not related to Judge Roberts, is she, in any way? Who are these people? Sig Rokich? They're supporting McCain. You get the picture, though. George Shultz. George Shultz never misses a charity dinner or lunch in San Francisco. Wherever there's a meeting or some kind of charity dinner, there's George Shultz giving a stump speech. Nice guy, fishy eyes. I guess he likes rubber chicken. Have no idea. Everywhere you go, there he is. And Charlotte Mailer Swig Shultz. There they are. Rubber chicken dinners and them. Nice people. But hello.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
WOR, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Where do you stand on the evolution question?
I believe that the nexus of science and theology is actually biblical and can be found in the actual words of the original Hebrew in the Bible. The very first word of the Bible, Bereshis in Hebrew, mistranslated as in the beginning, is a testament to your position on God's having created other existence prior to the existence related in Genesis. God says, Bereshis, it is buh. Buh is the indefinite article, not the definite article, the. It is in a beginning. It is the construct form grammatically.
Hold on, stop right there. Stop. You are a biblical scholar, I take it, Jeff. You read the original Hebrew?
Yes, I do.
So I assume you've had an education beyond high school?
In several disciplines.
So in the original Hebrew, the Bible says not in the beginning, but in a beginning?
In a beginning of God creating heaven and earth. The word created, and again, the appropriate exegesis of the language is a...
Hold on. Someone may not understand that word. You're not actually using the name of the Christian God. You said exegesis. You didn't say Jesus, correct?
No, I did not say Jesus. I said exegesis as an interpreter.
Okay. Well, that's a big word for many of my listeners, particularly those who don't believe in evolution.
Well, I guess if one's intelligence is correspondent with one's intellectual acumen and education, then such language is a function of ordinary conversation, isn't it?
So, Jeff, you are a biblical scholar, and where do you come out on evolution and God?
I believe that God created humankind with the dynamic of evolution, with the ability to adapt to circumstances, situations, and to live with a sense of dynamic. God ordained us, God mandated us to subdue the universe. That is a declaration of learning science, becoming knowledgeable. The first element of creation is in a beginning. It's beginning. It's time. God first creates time. Then God creates, and creates, by the way, in Latin, refers to creatio ex nihilo, to create something out of nothing. And God creates heaven, transcendental space, and earth, physical space. Time, space, continuum.
So why, let me ask you a political question on this subject. Why is there a certain tendency now in certain quarters of America to reject evolution? Where is this coming from?
I believe that it threatens the intellectual ability to interpret and understand that there's a certain level of culpability that humankind has for its own actions.
So in other words, they want to create everything is God's will. We have no free will. We're going back to where we're just automatons, where it's all preordained. Not only was man created out of whole cloth, but one's life is preordained as well. Does that go hand in hand with the people who are anti-evolution?
That is correct. There's a definite sense, almost of a predetermined, predisposed circumstance under which we relieve ourselves of liability and culpability for our own actions. I'm sorry.
So in other words, the very same retrograde tendencies that we see in radical Islam, where there is no free will, is now occurring in certain quarters in America? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is what I'm saying. And I believe very much that to be the case. I believe that if you examine the nature of religious history and the evolution of religion, Islam itself is the result of evolution of religion. Muhammad took all of the religions available to him at the time. He took Christianity and made Jesus a prophet. He took Judaism and made Abraham and Moses prophets so that Islam would attract the Christians and the Jews. It was, in his mind, the ultimate evolutionary position of religious doctrine.
So we're having this seminar now on the Savage Nation, Jeff. Bible says God created the heaven and the earth, and he did so in 7 days. It does not say he experimented and created first the Neanderthal, etc. So now how do you answer those doubts and fears in a person?
The Bible indicates that God is proactive and responsive. I'm going to identify a narrative that takes place in the time of Moses. The children of Israel are with Moses in the desert, and God has given them the laws of inheritance. And the laws of inheritance are directed toward the sons of the fathers. And one of the families, the father's name is Tzelophehad, he has only daughters. And the daughters come to Moses, and they complain to Moses that they have been now excluded by virtue of their gender. Moses said, you know, that's a really great point. Let me check it out. He picks up the red phone. He calls God. He says, God, listen, we have a problem. These daughters of Tzelophehad are complaining about the laws of inheritance. What do I do? God says to Moses, you know what? They've got a valid position. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to change this and do this, and we're going to give them the right to inherit within these parameters. This is a God that is proactive. A God that is involved, is concerned, a God who adjusts. Now, it is our belief paradigm that God is omnipotent, God is all-powerful, God is omniscient, God knows everything, and that God is perfect. Well, if God is perfect, how can God make a mistake? And the answer is God does not make mistakes. The mistake is our misunderstanding and misinterpretation of that which God does. And absent a cumulative knowledge of the ancients, of the language, of the culture, the philosophy, and the theosophy, as well as the theology, far be it from any of us to assume that we have even the slightest inkling of what it is that God is doing. I had a bris the other day, and I was asked...
Explain what that means to the audience. That's a ritual circumcision.
Ritual circumcision, right? I'm sorry. And I was asked by several people there, what is it, Rabbi, what is it that God wants of us? What does God want? And I thought for a moment, and I said, you know, I have been studying God's words my entire life, and I cherish God's words, and I cherish God's poetry, and I cherish the beauty and the meaning of God's words, and I figured it out. I know what it is that God wants of us. May I share it with you?
Please.
God wants us to care about each other. Sounds very simple.
You know, I got to stop. I've got to stop right here because I happen to think your call was sent by God. I'm not saying that you're a mystical creature. I know you're real somewhere in New York. But when I woke up this morning, I was perplexed as to what I wanted to talk about today. And I couldn't form a real show. The news is boring, fundamentally. It's not that interesting. So I was reverting to my comedic self, which always works, because I can be a funny guy when I want to be, and I'm in the right mood. And the people enjoy it. They need a break, too. But, you know, the words that kept going through my mind from the morning shower onward all day long that I couldn't get out of my mind, Jeff, the words were man's inhumanity to man, man's inhumanity to man. This theme of man's inhumanity to man is what's playing out on television day and night. The world is descending into barbarism and into madness all over again. What we thought we left behind in the last century is coming back to haunt us, perhaps. I fear it'll be worse than the last century. In the last century, as you know, over 100 million people were slaughtered because of the false belief system called Marxism or communism. 100 million people were killed because of the false god of communism. God knows how many people are going to be killed in this century because of a religious conflict being instigated and fomented by psychotic imams around the planet. What is going to save us? If you are such a believer in God, do you think light will prevail? Do you think life will prevail? Or do you think that these throwbacks will drag the world back 1,000 years into darkness?
No, I think that one has to be optimistic, and one has to understand that optimism tempered with the realism of our very, very uncivilized civilization. We have lost our sense of civility, but we have not as yet fallen into the abyss of which you speak. I think we are certainly losing ground rather quickly. But
How much worse does it get than Columbia University, under the guise of diversity, teaching these abominations to the children, masochism, sadism, whipping people on the stage, and the so-called enlightened liberals like Bollinger, the president, say nothing about this. This is a once great university. Is this not a symbol of the decline and fall of the West?
I think that it's certainly a shout-out, to use the vernacular of the day, and a very coarse and abrupt reminder that we've got to reassess and reevaluate our moral compass and get back online here. We've got to learn that our future as a human race, our future as a civilization, is very much a function of our ability to reintegrate a sense of decency and kindness and culture that is rooted in understanding the divinity that is manifest in every human being.
Because yes.
Every human
to me, I've always I let flies out of a screen, for example. It's not because I know the fly. It's because I understand the DNA in that fly. I understand the complexity of the fly. I've seen the fly under a microscope. I've looked at a fly's eye under a microscope as a child. I understand a fly's wing, what a miraculous creation a fly is. And so, therefore, if the fly doesn't bother me, why not let it out of the room? To me, it's a way of making a prayer to God himself when I let a fly out of a room. I don't know if anyone could understand that. Maybe they think I'm, you know, crazy by saying a thing like that. But I don't need to kill a fly, in other words, just for the sake of killing a fly. If I'm walking and I see ants, must I crush the ant? Or if I have the choice, can I step over the ant? Why do I step over the ant? Does the ant bother me? Who put the ant on the planet? What is the ant doing, after all? The ant is doing his own business, minding his own business. So I tread lightly on the earth. But I will tell you that I see people who have no regard for human life, no regard for humanity. They would wash this earth in blood in the name of their false god. And I wonder if we in the West have not become too delicate for this battle. This is a religious time in America, as you know, the Christian world. Although it seems to be about shopping, it's also about worshiping the Lord Jesus Christ for the Christian people. A benevolent religion, the greatest religion the world has ever seen in its modern form in terms of civility. I think you would have to agree with that. There's no other religion on earth that permits every other religion to function within it with such benevolence, in my opinion. I have a question for you to think about, because you're the man I want the answer to, and just bear with me. The radical Muslim says that the West is corrupt and degenerate and sexually obsessed, and therefore we must all be butchered. And he wants to bring back the word of God. So he does so how? By insulting God, by slaughtering people and torturing them and cutting their heads off. Could God actually want people who are immoral to be killed in order to purify the world? And if that is so, what is more immoral? Sexual excess or murdering and slaughtering an innocent?
Three things very quickly to answer your question. Number one, the transgression of Sodom and Gomorrah was a function of man's inhumanity to man, and Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed.
Wait a minute. So in other words, when a man behaves in such a manner, or a woman behaves in such a manner as described, they are committing inhumanity to themselves and to other men.
That is correct.
These are inhuman acts.
These are inhuman acts, and these are acts that are a function of a lack of respect for the divinity that is manifest in each and every one of us.
We hear that such activity is diversity and that we should all open ourselves up to it, we're hearing is the word of the lie, the word of the devil.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I just flew back from L.A. I had planned to spend at least a couple of days there. But anyway, for whatever the reason, I'm back in my San Francisco studio. I can't wait to get home whenever I go away. I don't know what it is. I'm a homebody. You know, like, I'm a guy, once you get to know a certain area at a certain point in your life, for better or for worse, it's your home. And when you get to know every corner of the San Francisco Bay, as I know from boating, and I can name every bird on the bay. I don't mean by name. I can mean by species. I can name the birds of the bay. I know the points, Point Blount to wherever you want to name it. I know the coves. I know the names of most of the trees and many of the plants. This is called my home. I am not going to let people drive me out of here. I don't care what they do. I don't care what they say. That is why people fight for their homeland. This is my homeland. And L.A. is really a strange place to me. I got a new I didn't hate it or anything like I did it over Halloween. That was a product of the decadence and the partying, truthfully, which I can't take. It's a great scene in L.A. for a younger person. It's a loud, hysterical, you know, city. But I don't know how anyone could live there after the age of 30. I tell you the truth. I just don't know where they'd have to end up. Certainly you can't live in down, you know, you can't do the scene down there. It's unbelievable. I was in an Italian restaurant Saturday night. All right, the food was fairly good. And it was a change for me from my normal depressing old person San Francisco area Italian restaurant where, you know, that's what it is. I can't eat when people are screaming. They were screaming. And I mean screaming. The decibel level was louder than, let's say, two 1,500 horsepower MTU engines without any covers on them. Without exhausts on them. I never heard anything like it. I don't know how people can eat around it. Screaming, yelling. I can't understand why young people enjoy that kind of scene. And then there was like music behind it on top of it all. But all right, the owner was a friend of my son, and we had a nice time. And, you know, for that regard, I kept going out every 5 minutes with a glass of wine to stand in the street, to stand out on the boulevard and look at the bums and the other people going by. I could hardly eat. But, you know, if you like poseurs, if you like watching the phonies, it's a nice place to watch poseurs. The guy who pulls up, for example, with the Escalade, and he jumps out with a 6'5" bodyguard, and the bodyguard looks as big as a mountain, and he precedes the guy who got out of the car. Now the guy walks into the restaurant, and he looks around. He scans the landscape. doesn't order a drink. Everyone, oh, hello, 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 Bob, hello, you. And he has a single name, like Dodger. Hello, Dodger. Hi, Dodger. Hello, Dodger. Hello, Dodger. And the bodyguard stares at everybody. Then Dodger doesn't buy so much as a glass of wine. Dodger then leaves. Why did he leave? Well, you figure out why. Then Dodger leaves, and I ask a few people, who was that guy with the big bodyguard? He says to me, we don't know, but he's got a lot of money. I said, how do you know he has a lot of money? He says, we heard he has a lot of money. So I inquire a little further of some of the limousine drivers who were there with some of the other young conspicuous consumers. And one said to the other, well, that isn't even his bodyguard. That guy works as a bouncer down the street as a club, and he does this on occasion. So as you start to uncouple the onion, as you start to unfold the onion, you get the picture pretty clearly of the scene. You know, that's it. If you enjoy that kind of thing, God, you know, go and enjoy it. The girls know how to dress. I got to hand it to them, you know, and there's an awful large supply of pointy shoes in Hollywood. That's all I can say. It's the land of the pointy shoe. But these young girls can't get married. Nice-looking girls, they can't get married. Why can't they get married? There's a thousand reasons. What guy is going to marry someone who is, let's say, been on the market, let's put it delicately, for so many number of years? Who wants to marry a party girl from Los Angeles or from Hollywood? No matter how beautiful she is, what is her chance of getting married at age 29 to 30? Very, very low. And so there it is. I mean, you know, I don't know how the guys find anyone. I don't know how the girls find anybody. I don't know who finds anybody anymore.
Savage.
1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Richard in Las Vegas, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I need your help interpreting some of this funny language from UC Berkeley. You see, right. I've just finished my undergraduate study work in physics, and I'm applying to graduate school at UC Berkeley for physics. And they want me to write an essay about how I might serve educationally underrepresented segments of society with my degree.
Oh, what a bunch of garbage. So here you are, a brilliant science student. You're applying to graduate school, and they're giving you the communist litmus test?
Oh, yeah.
What in the world does physics have to do with underserved communities? What do they want you to tell them, how you would teach physics to a Native American?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor. San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Listen to this twisted thinking. Under a life section, it says Anglican Covenant, arrow aimed directly at liberal U.S. branch 5D. Now, look how the perverts twist everything. The perverts not only aimed an arrow, but they took a sword to the Anglican Church, and they perverted everything in the Anglican Church. So now that the church is fighting back, they say that the Anglicans are shooting an arrow at them, at the liberal church. At the center of the debate, U.S. Presiding Bishop of the Episcopal Church, you hear? Catherine Jeffords Shorey, some bishop. What's interesting here is that the Africans are on the right side of things. The Africans want traditional Christianity. They don't want anything to do with Annie Tuesome Newsom's idea of what a church should be. So here's the article. It says, leaders of the 77 million member Anglican Communion, deeply divided over the biblical view of homosexuality, it says, and other issues, ended a contentious six-day meeting in Tanzania Monday. A lot of young boys down there for $2 a pop, I'll bet. I bet you, I guarantee you that the bishops from certain areas of England like that trip. That's what libs always used to go like. I used to know a guy who used to love to go to Guatemala and come back with, like, baskets. And he really went down there for the boys. It was $2 a pop. Oh, a liberal, though, through and through. He used to wax eloquently on how the poor people were wonderful. You ever notice liberals always used to like to go to Central America, come back with, like, serapes? They were going down there either for girls or boys, which they could exploit for $2 or $3 a piece. Then they come back and tell you about how wonderful the people were. Heard it all. Oh, my God, I like Methuselah myself. The feared schism and expulsion of the liberal U.S. branch, the Episcopal Church, did not happen. But a new set of requirements. The USA's Episcopal Church may be tiny with only 2.2 million members. You know, the Episcopals are really amazing in America. They always have, like, they're usually rich, like the Episcopos. They're, like, very, like, upper-class, waspy types generally. They always have, like, a certain kind of thing in their nose. There's a certain nose that the Episcopos have, like a split down the middle. I don't know where that comes from. It's Dutch, I think. Just as French women have a really weird calf, like a lack of a gastrocnemius muscle, for some reason, there's a genetic... French women, I remember when I was in Paris many decades ago, they didn't have defined calves. I don't know how that happened. I haven't any idea how that occurred. But they don't have, like, a defined calf that you'd find in an American woman in France. That was like a genetic, either an anomaly or something. Maybe the French like it. But you didn't see the gastrocnemius muscle. The same thing with the Episcopalians. They have a certain kind of, like, a thing in their nose, like a certain thing. Like a cleft, the cleft in the front of their nose. I think it goes back to Holland. Something like that. And then a disciplinary committee, bad policy. So they try to ruin the church, in other words. How could you have a church and condone homosexual marriage? I'll never understand. I mean, if you're gay, you're gay. You know, good luck to you. But what are you trying to change a church for? Well, I don't understand this. I'll never comprehend this as long as I live. I got to clear the air. When I was younger in New York, I had many kinds of friends, truthfully. I knew gay people. Some of them became gay. No one wanted to get married. The last thing Jerry would have wanted would be married. He wanted a crazy wildlife, which is why he became gay. He went to Fire Island, and there were no consequences to his sexual behavior, and everyone did it day and night on Fire Island. That's why Jerry became gay. He had a high sex drive, and he couldn't get enough women. So in his case, I think he became gay just to enjoy himself more. There are people like that, by the way. I know this is offensive to most of you because, you know, you don't want to hear reality. But would Jerry have ever wanted to marry Johnny? Never. And he would have laughed at you. He says, now, he would have said to me, if I said, Jerry, you want to get married in your old age? He would have laughed. He said, what do you think the point is I'm gay for? He says, I don't want to be like my mother and father and end up hating each other over a kitchen table. That's what he would have said to me, I would imagine. I don't want to wind up in the cardiac ward, you know, because of her. You understand I'm giving a reality here? Now, all of a sudden, you wake up like a Rip Van Savage 30 years later. You're to believe that every gay person wants his only goal in life was to be married and have a child. It makes no sense. The whole thing's crazy. A few radicals who are Bolsheviks through and through, that's a phrase for communist, understand that the most profound brick of civilization is the marriage between a man and a woman. In other words, the family is the brick of civilization. So how can you break down civilization and remake a society? You break the brick of civilization called marriage between a man and a woman. You come up with a cockamamie, a phony marriage called man plus man, a woman plus woman. It makes no sense. You can't marry a man to a man. It can't be done. The word marriage cannot apply to it unless you're crazy. Unless you're totally crazy in your head. You can't believe that that's possible. That's redefining reality for the last numbers of thousands of years. Okay? Everyone knows that. Everybody knows that. Muslim, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Hindu. Everybody knows that, except the liberal, the mentally disordered. They tell you, oh, no, marriage between a man and a man is simply a lifestyle choice. Oh, yeah, it's a choice. Nothing. Drinking cyanide is the same as drinking orange juice. Same thing. Makes you, no, but it's a drink, isn't it? It's a liquid. See, they would say, here's their argument. you're putting the cyanide in a glass as you would put orange juice. Okay, so they're both liquids. They're both contained in a glass. Therefore, they're both valid to drink. Well, no, they're not both valid to drink. If you drink orange juice, it's healthful. If you drink cyanide, you die. So, in other words, just because it's liquid and it goes in a glass doesn't mean that it's a valid liquid to drink. The same thing, and just because two people stand before a perverted crackpot who will marry them doesn't mean that it's a valid marriage. You get it? How come no one else can speak as eloquently as I can on such profound social issues? I don't know what I want to do. I caught a sunburn yesterday. I feel like I'm like I laid on the beach at Coney Island. And I stay out of the sun because I had the skin cancer removed about 8 times already in the temple area from the early years, from in the sun when my mother thought getting color was good for me. Go in the sun, get color. I would come back like a lobster. Good, you look good. They were laying down a cancer in the skin. How did they know? They didn't mean anything by it. They didn't know. They didn't have a knowledge of it then. The same with the food. You know, the heavy food in the morning, eggs and steak for dinner and meatloaf for lunch. Did they really know they were killing their son? They wouldn't have done it, I don't think. Do you think maybe they were doing it on purpose to get rid of the males? Sometimes I think that generation of women was like a female cult. They got married only to have a daughter, the son they could have done without, and the husband. Then the Viagra came along. Thank God many of them passed away before that. Could you imagine that? That the man loses the ability just at the right point when the woman doesn't really want him anymore to do that. Now all of a sudden, bing, they got Viagra going around. A guy could be any age. Suddenly he's like he's got a glint in his eye and he's stalking her all over the house and she don't want nothing to do with the guy. It's like a curse for a middle-aged woman. You know, you think every woman wants to do this? They don't. Most of them leave it behind them at a certain point. But in those days, the women gave it up after, like, the second child. They had sex twice, two children, and that was it. God didn't want them to enjoy themselves because they never did enjoy it. Would you have enjoyed it either if your husband was like a furrier and weighed 350 pounds and looked like Gerald Nadler? You know, and that was set up. Most of you don't know who Gerald Nadler is. You got to leave him alone. He lost a lot of weight. Now, I'm not making any allegations at all, but, you know, I saw something shocking. In his heyday, Gerald Nadler, the heavyset kind, that's how we used to say fat in my day, heavyset. Or night, they used to say he's light on his feet. That meant for a fat guy, he didn't collapse altogether when he danced. But Gerald Nadler used to be really a hefty, heavy guy. Then all of a sudden, he went on some diet. Now he's like only doubly overweight. He's 150% of normal body weight for a man his size instead of 300%. There was a character in The Sopranos, remember? I forget his name. Is it Spatafori? The one who, no allegations at all, but he also lost weight, remember? Now we're going to talk about the man who sued IBM over adult chat room firing. A man who was fired by IBM for visiting an adult chat room at work is suing the company for $5 million, claiming he's an internet addict who deserved treatment and sympathy rather than dismissal. James Pakenza, 58, of Montgomery, whatever that is, says he visits chat rooms to treat traumatic stress incurred in 1969 when he saw his best friend killed during an army patrol in Vietnam. Now, I don't know how going to a chat room about sex helps that, but in papers filed in federal court in White Plains, New York, Pakenza said the stress caused him to become, quote, a sex addict. And with the development of the internet and internet addict, he's now claiming protection under the Americans with Disabilities Act. His lawyer, Michael Diedrich, said Pakenza never visited porno sites at work. He violated no written IBM rule and did not surf the internet any more or any differently than any other employee. He also says age discrimination contributed to IBM's actions. Pakenza, 55 at the time, had been with the company for 19 years and says he could have retired in a year. IBM has asked Judge Stephen Robinson for a summary judgment, saying its policy against surfing sexual websites is very clear. It also claims Pakenza was told he could lose his job after an incident 4 months earlier, which Pakenza denies. Company says plaintiff was discharged by IBM because he visited an internet chat room for a sexual experience during work after he had been previously warned. IBM also said sexual behavior disorders are specifically excluded from the ADA and denied any age discrimination. That's very interesting. That is very, very interesting to claim, traumatic stress disorder caused him to look at porn. And now he's an addict, a sex addict, and he should do what he wants? Come on, who's going to buy this? I don't believe it at all. What I believe here is going to happen is the lawyer is simply bargaining with IBM to try to get them to pay his pension and to withdraw the lawsuit. If I were IBM, I'd take him to court and I'd throw the bum out. It looks to me like if you work for a company, the law is very clear. You cannot use the company computer to go onto chat rooms if it says so in the manual. You can't visit sex sites if it says so in the manual. You don't own that computer. You can't do that at work. Now to come and retroactively say, "Oh, I'm an internet addict. I'm a sex addict. I deserve treatment and sympathy." Rubbish. No one's going to buy it. He said that he went on a chat talk to divert his attention from thoughts of Vietnam and death. You hear this rubbish? He says, "I was tempting myself to perhaps become involved in some titillating conversation." Come on. Come on. I don't buy this at all. Psychiatric treatment? Now the lawyer says he should have been put into a treatment program. There's a treatment program. It's called firing.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
We could talk about beer if you want to talk about beer. I wouldn't claim I'm an expert. I wrote a book on beer in 1973. I actually have a copy in my hand. I can't reissue. Ooh, a bug just came out of it, so we got it from the warehouse. The chapter is one, Beginnings of a Shicker. 1977, my God, 87, 90s. I can't believe it. You know, I'm ashamed to tell you, 30 years ago, I wrote this book on beer. I loved it. I brewed beer at home. I traveled. I drank it. I went to the brewing societies, this, that. I had pipes in the house and malt and hops and groat and barley, oat spitz peas and barley groat, spruce and hops. Who needed to get so involved with it? But I learned a lot in doing it. I really get it. Whatever I do, I throw myself heart and soul into it. Is beer still as popular as it once was? I don't know if people want it anymore. With the advent of medical marijuana, I don't know if they need it anymore. What do they need to do? They need a beer. Did you read the latest story on this, what the libs have done? Kids are now using the ruse of medical marijuana, which is a fraudulent concept to begin with, to smoke marijuana in school. I warned you. I told you about this. It's being pushed by corrupt doctors and the drug lobby that want to addict more children younger. There is no such thing as medical marijuana. It's a complete myth created by George Soros. And George Soros, by the way, the evil Dr. Soros, if I was ever doing like a movie, I would cast him as the evil doctor who wants to destroy America. That's how I view this guy. Evil Dr. Soros spent $1 million to bamboozle the American people into passing medical marijuana legislation in Arizona and California. Now you got kids smoking marijuana in high schools and producing a thing from a shyster doctor. Some quack doctor down there, you know, some mail order doctor who got his degree from the University of Miami or something like that, or Guadalajara U. I knew a kid in Queens. He wanted to be a doctor so badly, but he was too stupid to be a doctor in America. So he waited, saved his money, saved his pesos, and he went to a medical school in Mexico, Guadalajara. He was like a fat, ugly kid that no one would talk to. I won't mention his name. I won't mention Bobby Moskowitz's name. That wasn't his name. So this kid waited and waited. 20 years later, boom, after, I don't know what, he had to learn Spanish. Then he got a degree out of there. Then he went to more school. Of all things, he becomes a plastic surgeon. Could you imagine now going to a guy like this to have, like, flab removed from your stomach? This guy would remove your kidneys and sell it to someone in Brazil for $5,000. But that's what I'm saying. That's the kind of person that would give you today, if you didn't have the brains, let's say, to go to medical school to become a doctor in Mexico even. Let's say he just went to Harvard or NYU, something on that level. He writes a script now, yeah, medical marijuana for nervousness, can't sleep, medical marijuana. They're all over San Francisco and Los Angeles, these kind of doctors. They don't make much money anymore. So they reverted to being drug peddlers. That's why I have more respect for a crack dealer, let's say, on the streets with a lot of gold chains and an SUV than I do for most medical doctors today. At least the crack dealer is an honest man. He doesn't pretend to be something other than a healer. He's not a healer. He's a peddler. But the MD today, not all of them, this type who writes the medical marijuana script, this type of doctor is lower than a drug dealer. That's all. Next case. Let's move on.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Story comes out and says that there's a new Bible out. Of course, it's from the Reformed Jewish movement, which, as far as I'm concerned, let's just say doesn't appeal to me. I don't like Reform anything. I mean, either you're with God or you're not with God. So this idea of putting out a Bible that has no reference to gender is insanity. And what, you know, if Reform Judaism keeps this up, what they're going to do is drive the younger and younger Jews who are desiring a relationship with God away from the temple. And they're going to continue to search in other vineyards, foreign vineyards. It's the same with Christianity. The more Christianity flirts with this non-gender Bible, God is not a man, God is not a woman, God is not this, God is not that, more and more of the children are going to experiment with Buddhism first. And I'll make a prediction that millions of them find Islam as the only religion that will satisfy them. I'm not suggesting it, but that's what's going to happen. Anyone who has a desire to find God, who goes into a temple or into a church and doesn't find God, they're going to continue to search for God. And what the true believer needs is an absolute. And they want a religion that's absolute. And the more Judaism moves away from an absolute view of God and faith and morality, the more Christianity moves away from God, faith, and morality, the more millions move away from Judaism and Christianity. Some of them never come back to religion. Many of them become sort of fallen Jews, or let's say lapsed Catholics or lapsed Protestants or lapsed Jews. And then some of them stumble into Buddhism, and they misinterpret Buddhism completely. They think it means do as you will. They think it's Rabelais rather than Buddhism. They think it means do as you will, that it's a religion of freedom. It's the opposite of a religion of freedom. Again, this is liberalism misinterpreting Buddhism. And eventually, a true believer will become a Muslim, as did Rat Boy. Jonathan Lynn, remember Rat Boy? Remember old Rat Boy went to fight for them? His parents were Catholic. The father left his mother for another man. The kid became a whack job because any kid whose father runs away with another man has to go crazy. So, of course, he's going to search for an absolutist vision of God to not understand how this could happen to him. And so, you know, so the kid finds himself holding an AK-47 fighting American troops. That's why he's rotting in a hellhole somewhere here. But that's besides the point. So now it comes out that the Reformed Jews don't have it reform enough. Now they want to make God into something other than a male. So here's a survey comes out and says, a majority of people think God is male, with nearly half of the population of Britain believing that all religions discriminate on grounds of gender, blah, blah, blah. As it is, only 1% of people in England think of God as female. Now, if 1% of people think of God as a female and 62% consider God to be a male, I'd like to know what happened to the other 38%, 37%. Do they think that 37% think that God is a she-male? I don't understand this math in this story. If only 1% of people think of God as female and 62% consider God to be a male, that's 63%. So what do the other 37% think? God is a she-male or God lives in San Francisco? I mean, what are they talking about? I don't understand the survey. And let's see what else. Commission. Sorry. I shouldn't have even given you this story. The poll was commissioned by the Movement for Reform Judaism in Britain to coincide with its launch of its new daily and Sabbath prayer book. The prayer book removes male descriptions of God, such as King, Father, and Lord, in favor of gender-neutral expressions, such as Eternal One and Living God. It includes mentions of prominent women from the Old Testament for the first time in prayer, such as, Barbara Boxer in heaven? Diane Feinstein, our goddess in heaven? It also provides prayers for 21st century problems, such as environmental and natural disasters, including prayers for depression, miscarriage, and the death of a child. How touching does it get? You know what I think of the new prayer book? Same thing I think of this story. Use it for target practice, as far as I'm concerned. If that offends thee, pluck it out, because I don't care what you think. To me, a watered-down religion is as good as no religion. So let's go back to the callers. We got Martin, who's been holding kindly from Cincinnati, Ohio. Martin, go ahead, please. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I tell you, you earlier talking about the complete freedom, and just like with the socialism, how it's a bad thing, I believe complete, total liberty is the good thing, because then people can do whatever they want. And if they choose to do something...
Slow down. Come on, Martin, you're pulling my leg, because you know that there's no such thing as absolute freedom.
Well, but if there was...
You mean the freedom, let's say, for you to walk down the street and grab a child off the street and kiss them? Is that what you mean by freedom?
No, could be viewed as like infringing on that child's rights. So that would be against the law.
Okay. Wait. You just said against the law. Why would we need law if you believe in total freedom? Why would we need any law at all? So wait, you're agreeing that we need some law, correct?
Yes, the Constitution.
Oh, wait, hold on. Why do we need some law?
Well, because we can have order that way. Chaos is, like, unproductive.
All right. So we agree, therefore, that total freedom would lead to anarchy. So you and I both agree that we don't need anarchy. We don't want anarchy. It would be harmful to the freedom that we both want to enjoy, the freedoms we wish to enjoy, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So an orderly society needs some laws. We agree on that. But not too many laws. Not laws that infringe on our fundamental freedoms and liberty. We agree on that.
Maybe. I believe in, like, the total freedom to do whatever we want as long as it doesn't interfere or infringe on anyone else's rights to do what they want, which is...
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good in theory. That sounds good in theory. But there are limitations to that, I mean, that we can start arguing over. You do understand that... Let's start with the obvious, a highway, a roadway, four corners. We both agree you need red lights, yellow lights, and green lights, or else cars would crash into each other, right?
That's correct, yes.
All right, wait, so that's a good analogy for why we need some laws, because otherwise we'd be crashing into each other or shooting each other or molesting each other or whatever, punching each other in the nose over the slightest disagreement, correct?
That's different than traffic law. That goes back to our freedom of liberty. The traffic law is essentially just structure, just like building codes, like things have to be buried 3 feet because of the frost line. But as far as our choices for moral behavior, I believe that's the government's complete hands-off, because my view is...
You mean complete hands-off. So, again, we're arguing you should be able to go up and kiss a child in the street?
Well, I mean, at one time people did that in some cultures. I mean, as long as my intent wasn't malicious, then it's not...
What culture could they go up and take somebody else's child and kiss them on the lips?
Well, I don't know. Maybe... Well, the Pope gives people kisses...
You're pulling my leg. You know that if you did that, someone would probably shoot you if you grabbed their child and kissed them on the lips and they didn't want you to. I mean, come on, you'd probably be tarred and feathered in this country today. I agree with you that people are very paranoid about their children to an extent I've never seen anything. I'm afraid to even look at a child kindly in this society. Things have become so bad. But I don't believe in total freedom. And look, are you an educated person? You know that there are no absolutes. There's no such thing as absolute freedom, Martin.
I believe there is. I mean, okay, let's look at – I know you've talked
about – Wait. The first principle of science, or one of the primary principles of science, is that there are no absolutes. So how can you argue then that there is a thing called absolute freedom?
Because it's our Constitution. We should be allowed –
No, it is not. The Constitution does not promise you absolute freedom. It actually promises you relative freedom. It says you shall have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's fundamentally what it promises. Nothing more, nothing less. But it doesn't mean you shall be able to grab your neighbor's son and kiss him on the lips, Martin. I'm sorry. Don't try it in my neighborhood. San Diego, Hal, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thank you, Mike. You know, I was listening to your show the other day talking about homosexuals and the California Supreme Court ruling. And, I mean, you really had me going, because I had no choice but to pick up the phone and salute you on this issue. First of all, I'm a Muslim, and I want to bring an Islamic perspective on this issue. First of all, Islam is strictly forbidden homosexuality. Many verses made out throughout the Quran forbidden homosexuals and homosexuality.
I want you to lay it on the line, Hal. Now, what I'm hearing and what you're saying, and I'm going to let you talk, is this. Generally, you don't agree with anything I say. Is that what I'm hearing?
I agree with a lot of the stuff you're talking about in your show, and I listen to...
All right, so we disagree probably on the issue of Israel and Palestinians and all of that, and we probably disagree on a little bit with other issues, but by and large on family values and how a family and society should be structured, we're 100% in agreement.
Absolutely.
Well, you want to hear something? This is not the first time I've heard this. Hal, I got to tell you, I used to be a local talk show host. Only a local talk show host. And in the Bay Area, there are a lot of Palestinians in the grocery business and many other fields. I would get call after call. I'd run into Palestinians who say, you know, Mike, I love 99% of what you say. I agree with you 100% on everything you say, except the issue of Israel and Palestine. And I knew it. I knew that the Muslims are diehard conservatives when it comes to family values, and that I was not alone in my viewpoint.
Mr. Savage, I want to remind you that the Quran reminded the Muslim nation with the nation of Lot, who used to be a homosexual nation, that they lived in what's known now in modern history as Jericho. I'm from Palestine, and I visited that canyon where the Masada is, and I saw what happened to those people. God split the earth and had the earth swallowed those nations. That was God's punishment to this nation for being homosexuals. The other thing I want to talk about, I know you have some Jewish blood in you, and I have some Arab blood in me because I'm a Palestinian and I'm Arab, and we both the sons of Sam. You and I might disagree on a lot of issues, but when it comes to this issue, you are my cousin, okay? And the other thing I want to...
Well, you know, it's time the cousins got together before the sodomites take over the world.
All cousins should get together, Muslims, Christians, and Jews.
How come when I opened this show up on this topic last week after that abomination of those four ambulance-chasing judges who should be put in orange jumpsuits, they should change from black to orange, as far as I'm concerned, in a pair of handcuffs, for stealing the votes of 4 million people and saying, drop dead, you don't matter, families don't matter. When I said that, I asked people to call from the following backgrounds and give us the religious perspectives. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism. All of them said the same thing. Every last person who called said that their religion prohibits homosexuality and prohibits this kind of dissemination of this to our children, because it's understood. It's common sense that if you brainwash a child in that manner, you're going to destroy the civilization.
And also, Mike, I want to let you know, I'm a practicing Muslim. I visit the mosque on Fridays, and I go to the mosque on many occasions. And I interact with a lot of Muslims, and I hear the imams and the sheikhs talking about those social issues. And they openly talk about them in mosques. Mainstream Muslims will not vote Democrat because of those social issues, regardless of what's going on. As far as the war in Iraq or Afghanistan or the war on terror or anything, we care for this country socially, and we want to protect this country from the stinky social agenda that the Democrats are promoting day and night. Therefore, I tell you, the good news is most Muslims will not vote Democrat because of those social issues.
Well, you know, Hal, this is an enlightening phone call. It's actually exciting, in addition to being enlightening. And I have to absorb what you're saying to me, and I hope that it's more general than specific, meaning I hope that it's not just you and your particular mosque. I hope this spreads through the entire Muslim community in America, that they cannot be taken in by Obama, because as sure as I am sitting here, Hal, you and I both know what Obama will do with regard to the gay agenda. You know it, and I know it.
Mike, this is a general mainstream ideology among Muslims all over. Because we're not talking about an isolated case with my mosque in San Diego. We're talking about because what the homosexuality contradicts with the main concept of Islam. So any practicing Muslim, when I say practicing Muslim, I'm talking about 1.3 billion Muslims worldwide. I'm talking about 8 million American Muslims in the United States. Know deep in their hearts that homosexuality contradicts with the main concept of Islam, because the concept of Islam is built on four main elements. The main element is, the first element is submission, the second element is surrender, the third element is obedience, and the fourth element is submission, surrender, sincerity. So in order for a Muslim to be a Muslim, they have to submit and obey in sincerity, and they have to surrender to their God. So God ordered Muslims not to be homosexuals because obedience is a very important issue in Islam and the concept of Islam.
You know, Hal, you confirm two things that I've said on the show over the years. How many years have you listened to this show at in general? How many years have you heard this show?
I only been here for a year and a half in the States, and I have been listening to your show on and off. I mean, whenever I'm in my truck or out there working.
You know why I ask it? Because you can ask your Palestinian friends in particular, if I have not made the following statement several times over the last 15 years. I have said that the Palestinians are the most intelligent of the Arab people, which is why they're the most oppressed, which is why every other country is afraid of them. That's number one. You have confirmed that truth. Secondly, it is very important that you tell through your communities, through your imams, that Michael Savage has been misinterpreted. Michael Savage has been – his message has been perverted by the American left that wants him destroyed. And they are using the Muslim community to try to destroy me by fear-mongering – and twisting things that I never said about Islam and the Quran, which is why I'm in a battle against CAIR, because my message was twisted by American leftists who, to a man, are perverts. Hal, I want to tell you again, the American left is filled with perverts who want to push the homosexual agenda and will destroy any family values conservative in their way, no matter what they have to do. And please tell the Muslim community not to be manipulated anymore by these left-wing demons. God bless you. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
If you look at the movies that won prizes in the new Hollywood, where the red diaper dopa baby rules, you will see that La Vie en Rose for Best Actress is a biopic of a hooker and a junkie who could sing. You will then see that the movie Michael Clayton, where a Best Supporting Actress a prize was given, is about an evil corporation and a good class action lawyer. Did you hear me? A good class action lawyer and another evil American corporation. Now what about There Will Be Blood? Violence and blood every 10 or 15 minutes. What's the next movie that won every award imaginable? By the so-called Coen brothers. No Country for Old Men. Best director. Best movie. Motion picture of the year. Best supporting actor. And what is it about? Violence, blood, drugs. Violence, blood, drugs. And what else won Best Original Screenplay? Movie called Juno. What's it about? Unwed mother. Not about a Christian mother. Not about a Jewish mother who marries and has a baby within the bounds of wedlock. Not about a normal, healthy American woman of any kind, but again about an unwed mother and her travails. Again, what is glorified? Violence, blood, drugs, evil, hookers, and junkies. Once again, we see the 1960s have permeated the movie business to the extent that the ethos of the 60s is completely now the ethos of Hollywood. That is, the so-called anti-hero is glorified. Anything anti-American is now considered heroic. Anything anti-corporate, even though Hollywood is run by corporations, is now seen as a viable and clean. And who are the heroes? Well, once again, the whore, the rapist, the pimp, and the murderer. Can you name one movie with a hero you did want to emulate when you left the theater? We can go way past John Wayne and Gary Cooper and Humphrey Bogart. We can bring it up to a closer time than that. This all collapsed after the 1960s when marijuana was deeply ingrained or started to become deeply ingrained in the white culture. It was originally restricted largely to the lower classes, largely to the jazz musician class. And then it permeated the white middle class, children mainly of communist, socialist backgrounds, anarchist a little thrown in. In other words, red diaper babies who were given dope. They became RDDBs, as I named them, red diaper doper babies. And many of them went to Hollywood. Not so strangely enough, they went to Hollywood, where we now see we are at the nadir of the bottom. It can get lower, yes. We can have movies about incest. They have not been promulgated to any great extent.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
The compact edition of the Oxford English Dictionary. Huge volumes. And I try to find out the origin of the word sedition. And I found it. We know what it is. But if you look in your dictionary, you'll find that seduce follows sedition, which is interesting unto itself. The word right after seditious is seduce. What are the synonyms for seduce? We're talking about the Hollywood left. Allure, inveigle, entice, attract, tempt, bait, bribe, lure, induce, defile, deprave, lead astray, violate, prostitute, rape, or deflower. What are the antonyms for seduce? The opposite of the word seduce, preserve, protect, and guide. Michael Savage and the Savage Nation are the antonym to the seduction of Hollywood. They are committing sedition. The antonym to what they're doing is to preserve, protect, and guide. Do you think they're preserving and protecting and guiding America by these attacks on the president in a time of war or on the eve of war? Do you think they're preserving and protecting and guiding America when our troops need to gird their morale in order to face these demons, many of whom would die for their cause, the opposition? I don't. Las Vegas, Nevada. James, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. 2 points. The first, as proof that the Hollywood types are only anti-Republican in concert with the left-wing media, is there's only one Hollywood actor in history who was ridiculed for daring to step into the political realm, and that was Ronald Reagan. All these other types are getting a pass. I find it fascinating. None of them have.
Yeah, no, you're right. But my main point is that all of these Sheens and the others never said a word when Clinton was dropping bombs on the Serbian people, not on the Serbian troops, but on the Serbian civilian population, killing men, women and children, 2,000 killed, according to UN reports, hospitals, schools, insane asylums, buses were blown up by the bombs. Not one person has gone to prison for that war crime. And the actors said nothing when the bombs were falling. In fact, to add insult to injury, they made a movie called Wag the Dog to give a bigger lie to the bigger lie. Remember that?
My other point, why does it always seem that the types that get involved in this as far as Hollywood goes are those whose careers are either one, on decline, two, are over, or three, haven't really gotten off the ground yet?
Yeah, no, I've noticed that as well. I've made a good point, and my old joke used to be that the lower they're behind, the higher their liberalism. And the more they're behind has fallen, the higher their liberalism. That's a more crude way of putting it. They start out with tight butts. Then as their butt falls, their activism on the left goes up. In other words, the less attractive they are, the less attractive they are. You know, in a way, James, when you think about it, the less attractive they are, the less attractive they are says it all. I mean, really, how many Americans really agree with them? Let's see. Anti-war protests coinciding with International Human Rights Day. Oh, God. When I hear the word human rights, I make sure my AR-15 is oiled. Because anyone comes to get me, it's going to be human rights Nazis. I guarantee it. Let's see. Connecticut protest, the reverend. There's a lot of reverends out there. You know, they're very reverent of what? I don't know. The reverend of anti-Americanism, Reverend Sharpton. Does he actually have a congregation in Brooklyn? Because I don't see the collar. Can somebody enlighten me? If you're a reverend, don't you have to wear a collar and have a church somewhere where you lead people on Sunday? Connecticut protester. All right, let's listen to clip 71.
War is a weapon of mass destruction. It will wreak massive destruction on the people of Iraq as well as on our own troops. So we think diplomatic means have not in any sense been exhausted, and we need to pursue those. The vast majority of people in this country, in fact, are quite ambivalent, that they're frightened, that they're uncertain, and they're looking for a place to voice that ambivalence and uncertainty. Those of us who are out here today believe strongly that war is moron.
What do you know about the vast majority of American people? You and your girlfriends? That's the vast majority. They all speak for the American people, her and her girlfriends. They meet in some Wiccan somewhere, some practicing some Wiccan religion, sitting in some teepee somewhere, you know, drinking blood, dining on pigeon feathers and rat dung. You know, God in heaven, where do they get there? Yeah, okay. I can get down and dirty with them. I know how to get down into the Bronx level, believe me. Want to go up, I go up. You want to go down, I go down. You want to do the legitimate argument, do the legitimate argument. You want to do the scatological, I'll do the scatological. You want to do the whatever, I'll do it. I'll do the dance. Here's another one. Let's see clip 73. Here's another protester. Another one. Let's hear this one.
We don't want the U.S. to continue to act in the world as a superpower that doesn't really realize the consequence of its actions on the people in the countries where it goes in and...
Shut up, you snotty idiot. What do you know? Shut her up! Shut up, this snot-nose. Snot-nose, little prostitutes. They send them to college. They become degenerate in 1 month. They hand them condoms on the way in. The big, mean-faced, clipped-haired brigade. That's who's running the colleges today. Who do you think took them over? Mean-faced, clipped-haired oven stuffers. They look like they work in Bergen-Belsen. They give them a cap and gown. All right, girls, here are your condoms. The orientation session. First thing you got to do is sleep with your sorority sister to fit in around here.
No, we don't think that America knows what it's doing a superpower. We were never taught to hit back.
Brainwashed little liberal lemming. Next one. Give me the next one. Let's go through them. Go ahead. Next one, 74. Let me hear this one.
Every time I come to a rally, I see new people joining us. I see an incredible diversity of people.
Yeah, you're full of garbage. What do you know about diversity, moron? You don't see any conservatives in that crowd, do you? Diversity of what?
Wait,
stop. Okay, I'm going to be fair to this jerk. Start it again.
Every time I come to a rally, I see new people joining us. I see an incredible diversity of people, and the movement is growing, of people with a strong consciousness throughout this country that are, in growing numbers, standing up against war.
Yeah, full of garbage. Greater diversity. Yeah, you got your black brothers and your Hispanic brothers in the crowd now. My God, that's all that's on their mind. These people are going to kill us. The left is going to kill us. They've destroyed the fabric of our society. They've destroyed marriage as an institution. They perverted our children's minds. They have destroyed the church. They are going to destroy our war capacity. They've almost destroyed our police department. Thank God the police are still strong enough to fight for America against the thin blue line, protecting us from the vermin out there that would wreck us on a daily basis. And now they want to deball the military. Well, I rest my case.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I'll call you when we land.
Say hi to Don Ho.
Love you.
Let's go, John.
What? Wait a second.
Let's go.
Stand back, please.
Can't you let my daughter leave at least? Come on.
Daddy, what's happening?
I will not ask you again.
Oh, my God.
What are you doing?
Get your hands off him.
Is that necessary? Stand back. Now.
He saw some unpleasant things happen, unfair stuff, but he didn't whine about it, and he didn't complain.
Well, we are listening now to the breakdown of America. There's George Bush Sr., apparently the father of the most powerful man in the world, breaking down in tears in public. I'm embarrassed. Are you embarrassed that George Bush Sr. cried in public? Should men cry in public? The fact of the matter is, the answer is no. Men shouldn't cry in public. It makes us look like a nation of weaklings. I was raised not to cry in public. I was raised to be a man. My father taught me men don't cry in public. That's how men have been raised from the beginning of time. Now, I realize we've been feminized. I realize that there's a tremendous movement to and turn him into an appendage of his mother's shopping bag. Look at the little boys. You could cry for them. There's a lot of mothers raising their sons alone, and I look at the boys. I don't know how they're going to be men. I don't know how these boys can become men. I'm not blaming the mother or the boy, and nor am I casting aspersions on the single mother struggling to raise a child without a father, some deadbeat bum who ran away. But the fact of the matter is, you see them raising him like little girls. You got to raise a boy not to cry in public. Now, I'm embarrassed that George Bush Sr. broke down in public, and that's why I played that piece and also the piece from The Sopranos when the character, John Sacramento, is forced to leave his daughter's wedding like a little early by the federal marshals taking him back to jail. And the character is shown to cry. Then the gang meets afterwards and they say, I don't know about you, but it makes him look weak. And then we go on to George Bush breaking down in public. I know he's an older guy, and he's losing it. Obviously, he's not at the top of his game, and we have to forgive him for that. He's over 80 years old. He jumped out of a plane at 80, and I give him credit for that. But the fact of the matter is, this was an embarrassment. I don't see the enemy crying in public. Do you see them crying in public? Last I checked, Al-Qaeda doesn't seem to cry in public. Osama bin Laden has not been seen on tape crying in a cave. I haven't seen any of the enemies crying in public, but it's okay in America. Just okay to continue to feminize this country and wreck us emotionally and destroy the manhood of this country. You know, I believe that the light of liberty is going out in the United States of America, and I want to know who controls the media by celebrating the coming darkness. I was shocked to listen to the talking fools celebrating Mr. Chavez's victory in Venezuela as though it was good for America. Something is so wrong with this picture. Now, I know I can explain part of it, that it's got to do with oil. And we know that Fox News is owned to a 18th percentile by a Saudi prince, oil, Murdoch oil, talking heads on Fox, stooges of Murdoch, stooges of oil, stooges of Saudi Arabia. Don't tell me they're independent. Don't tell me they're conservative. Don't lie to me. They're an outlet. An outlet of the boss's ideas. Why did they celebrate Chavez's victory? Chavez is a dictator. Chavez wants to close down all of the private television stations and television and private media in Venezuela. Is that something to celebrate in America by liberals? Sure, it must be. It must be because the media is celebrating it. Not only did the media celebrate it, but somebody by the name of Joseph Kennedy celebrated it. Joseph Kennedy is the eldest son of Robert Kennedy, who runs a group called Citizens Energy Corporation. Listen to clip 7.
It is the leadership of President Hugo Chavez who has recognized the struggles of so many poor people. Be grateful. In 30 years, there was only one country that ever gave us a price break, and that's the Venezuelans.
And there is the suspicious Joseph Kennedy proclaiming how grateful we should be for the election of anti-American, anti-freedom dictator Hugo Chavez. That's the eldest son of Robert Kennedy. I don't know what it is with the Kennedys. I don't understand these people. I know that they were wealthy at one time. I know that their wealth has diminished dramatically under the inheritors of this wealth. as is true in most families. But for them to be embracing this form of communist dictatorship, you know, in South America is astounding in the light of the fact that the media isn't catching it. Listen to the montage of talking heads praising Hugo Chavez's victory, whether it be Fox, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, or KGB. It's all the same in clip one.
Yet another big election win for the Venezuelan president, Hugo Chavez.
President Hugo Chavez cruising to a landslide re-election victory.
Sweeping victory of Hugo Chavez.
Massive street celebrations.
Another defeat for Mr. Danger.
He told his adoring supporters, it's another defeat for the devil.
Revolution for the 21st century.
Subversive activities.
Power to the people.
It is the leadership of President Hugo Chavez who has recognized the struggles of so many poor people.
Mr. Chavez just won another six-year term in Venezuela as president.
Be grateful. In 30 years, there was only one country that ever gave us a price break. And that's the Venezuelans.
You know who he means.
From Saudi sheiks to Marxist sheik, this is the Savage Nation. From Saudi sheiks to Marxist sheik, today we have learned that the Bush administration commended the Venezuelan public for participating in democracy, a de facto congratulation of Hugo Chavez on his election victory. Our politicians are patting socialists on the back now. Go, girl, go. They are chummy with communists as a red stain is spreading across our hemisphere. Once again, we see there is no conservative leadership whatsoever. Once again, we have been betrayed by those who claim to represent the American right. Just as when Bush held hands with the King of Saudi Arabia, this latest disappointment will probably be followed by a group hug with Chavez at Castro's funeral. If Bush can hold hands with Saudi Arabia while they buy bombs for the terrorists, if Bush can pat Hugo Chavez on the back after Chavez has called him the devil, what other insanity is possible? Would Churchill have shared pasta fagioli with Mussolini? Would Roosevelt have had beer and bratwurst with Hitler while telling him how much he admired the efficiency of the German military, but he was going just a tad too far on that Auschwitz thing? Is the fact that there is oil in Saudi Arabia and oil in Venezuela enough to make us forget the fact that we are a nation that deplores evil, deplores communism, and loves freedom? If we have moved from Saudi sheik to Marxist sheik without a second thought, are we dead as a nation? We must stop praying to Mecca. We must stop bowing to Caracas. And until we do, we will be at the mercy of the throat cutters, whether they are Islamo-fascist now or Hispano-communist tomorrow.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Everyone in the government is telling me to expect a nuclear attack, a biological attack, not when, but definitely you're going to get it. And in a deadpan voice, no emotion, nothing, emotionless, like bureaucrats. I never saw anything like this. And the idiot journalists who are supposed to represent us sit there like dunces. And on the Cuba question, Mr. Cheney, right on to the next question. Just an issue today. Just a question. Honey, look, I got a big meeting after this. You got that town car ready? Yeah, and tomorrow, do we have booked that pimp that I saw on the Larry King last week? Yeah, get me the pimp. And on Tuesday, I want the hooker. We have the vice president here today. Who do we have on Wednesday? Do we have the paraplegic hooker with the mustache? Okay, I'll be. This is the media we have today. What am I, the last man in the world with a brain? Am I the only man left in the media with a brain and the guts to say what needs to be said? I tell you the truth, I am really worried. You think this is all theatrics. You liberals think it's a damn joke, don't you? It is not a joke anymore. You've killed America. You've made the government incompetent. It can't function. They know, hey, look, they're no dummies. They didn't get to the top of the pinnacle where they are by being stupid. They know who the enemy is. They know where they are, but they're afraid to touch him. Because you'll be the first to scream like the rats and mice that you are. Racial profiling. So what do you want me to do? I know where it's at. We no longer have the best and brightest. Sometimes I say we don't have the best and brightest anymore. We have the worst and whitest in power. It's no longer the best and the brightest. It's the worst and the whitest. You want me to tell you how to solve this problem? I'll lay it out for you, Jack. I've said it before, but you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. You're not going to believe what Michael said, what's going to come out of my lips now. No one's going to believe what I'm going to tell you. But I've said it before. It went over the airwaves. It went out like a bullet. Nobody heard it. We have fraternity boys running the country. We have elite fraternity boys who have never faced the real world. They have been protected like princes from childhood right to where they are today. I'd go into the worst gangs in America. I would get the baddest blacks, the baddest whites, the baddest Hispanics, the baddest Asians, and I'd bring them into a cabinet. And I'd say, look, boys, here's what we're doing. We're at war. What would you do to solve this problem? I can guarantee you that they could solve that problem much faster than the frat boys. That's what I say. What do you say? What do you say? It's not. You haven't heard this anywhere before? Doesn't make sense? Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. It's been done before. It was done in World War II. You see, the government of elitists at the time knew there was a problem on the waterfronts of America. They knew that the Germans had their Gestapo spies all over the waterfronts of the East Coast and the West Coast. And they knew who controlled the waterfront. And they didn't hire a smart idiot from Harvard or Yale. They went to Lucky Luciano, and they cut a deal with the mafia. And the mafia made sure that the Gestapo didn't function on the waterfront because they wound up with a meat hook in their back, and they were swimming with the fishes. And that was the end of the Gestapo on the waterfront, 99%. So it has been done before. I didn't invent this. It's got to be done now, or we're cooked. Stop with the frat boy talk. Stop with the frat boy solutions. Stop with the academic ease. These people are frightening me. What would you say would be a solution? I'll tell you what, I gave you one solution. I gave you brass tacks. Took a big risk, brass tacks. Solution one, go to the baddest Americans, bring them into the seats of power, and ask them what they would do. Don't even tell the people you did it. That's all. Maybe they've done it already for all I know. If I could figure it out, maybe they could figure it out. Ask them how they'd solve the problem. After all, they have businesses too. What do you think, they want to live in a world that's destroyed by the Taliban mentality? There'd be no crime. They wouldn't be able to make a buck. So believe me, they're the best capitalists you could ever imagine. That's right. Gangsters are very good capitalists. They love a capitalist system. They hate socialism. They hate terrorism. It's bad for business. Go to them. End the story. And if they're listening to me, you know I'm right. So you know that I'm right, but I'm not running garbage. I'm one guy on the radio, man, all alone, just twisting in the wind here. No, nothing. No dinners, no phone calls, no emails. You know what I'm saying? I come from another world. They don't want to know me. I don't want to know them. But the fact of the matter is, even an average man can figure this one out. You don't have to be a talk show host to figure it out. I figured it out. Step two, we got Polaris submarines, or whatever they're calling them now. For 50 years, we've invested trillions of dollars. You got them floating around under the ice cap, over the Arctic. And here they are popping in the ice. They could do anything. Beep, beep, beep. Yeah, Red October, Hunt for October. Well, Russia's gone. They're loaded to the rafters with nuclear missiles. You tell the snakehead, and you know who they are. We all know who they are. So much as the hair of one American child gets singed, you can all go to hell. And if you think that's a little harsh, think to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Because much better men did the same thing. They said, you know what? It's us versus them. They declared war on us. We don't want to sacrifice 500,000 or a million more American boys. Screw them. Here comes the bomb. Here comes the judge. And that was the end of World War II. Bay Area, Uri, you're on the Savage Nation.
Let me say that I am old enough to have known the very thing you're talking about. We beat the most evil axis that ever existed. Nazi Germany, dictator Italy, and Imperial Japan and all their satellites. So I would make a model that copied what they did. First of all, even then, in those days, we had an Office of Civil Defense. We had the captains on the block that told us when, how, and why. We were issued sandboxes. We were told that they would tell our schools how to evacuate. We had some sense, not of foreboding, but some sense of what would be if necessary. We infiltrated their spy networks. We supported their partisan efforts. We broke their codes and created some of our own. And then the bottom line, if you take that to modern day thinking, and that's what I say, follow the mode. We know for sure, at least unless our government's lying, there are 63 nations harboring Al-Qaeda. those are the nations I would first target to let them know the following. If Al-Qaeda is there and you don't get rid of them, we declare you persona non grata and you're out of our country. In the meantime, recruit from malcontents of the Arab-speaking world, and there are many of them, where we trained every one of their pilots.
Now, Yuri, let me. I would go on a little faster track. I'd let it be known to terrorist leaders that if they don't stop this in our country before it starts, we're going to nuke their capitals. We're going to knock them off the planet. I can guarantee you they can stop it faster than we can.
Swear one thing. On the bottom of my little list, I have punish all offenders severely with heavy sentences if the crime denotes it. However, identify...
Wait. What do you mean offenders? What kind of offenders?
Let me tell you what. I would suggest that every alien in this country has to register, particularly the enemy aliens, which we've outlined as being enemies, and given a certain time frame. If they don't report, then they're deported, or if they do any harm...
Uri, that's all well and good. How about the enemy aliens who have snuck into the country, who have no identity or false identities? That's not going to help. You're giving them the initiative. We've got to take the initiative. We've got to go and hunt them down for the government. The government won't do it. They're afraid of being called racist because the liberals have them in a bind. Thanks for the call. It's all about liberalism destroying America. I'm sorry. It all comes back. The federal government is paralyzed right now. It cannot become proactive. And that's why they're talking around. If you heard the speech last week, it said, we want you to be vigilant. We want you to be knowledgeable, but we want you to remain an American. Now, what does that code word mean? Don't you dare ever say anything against an ethnic group. Watch out. You say anything about a person of color, and the FBI will get you. Oh, that they can do. That they'll be at your door. Knock, knock, who's there? Oh, you said something about persons of color. Come with us. Take an overnight bag. But wait a minute. I was just following with... Never mind. You committed a race crime. You said something about a person of color. Come with us. But what about taking the person with cover? No, they haven't committed a crime, but you have. We got laws on the books, and we're following them. This way. We got a camp for you.
Savage.
Hey, la, de, ding, dong, a lang, a lang, a lang. Boom, ba, lo, ba, do, ba, do, ba, ba. Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above.
Only positive music on the Savage Nation. Listener called, very upset that I'm negative. We'll do the how to win friends and influence people for a variety.
Life could be a dream shaboom, if only shaboom. All my precious plans would come true. Mm-hmm. If you would let me spend my whole
thank you,
life.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Things are coming up roses. Everything's good. Things are wonderful. Bush is a conservative. This is the best election in American history. Things are going to get better. Everything's coming up roses. We've got tomorrow to look forward to. Tomorrow will be better. And beyond that, there will even be a better tomorrow. Our leaders think only of the people on a daily basis. There's not a quisling amongst them. The only quislings are in talk radio and in the media. Why the good people run things. They are in public service because they want to sacrifice for the people. They do it specifically because they're such good people. They've sacrificed private careers specifically so the little people can rest and sleep well at night. The Chinese don't mean any war. All of these interchanges between submarines and ships and missiles and things of that nature are simple misunderstandings. The Chinese military wants only peace with America. And our best friends, as you well know, are the Saudi Arabians. They have little religious schools around America and the world where this Wahhabist sect teaches peace and love towards the non-Muslim. Everything's coming up roses, you see. Things are good. Everything's fine. America's a great country. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow will be better and better and better. Your children will do slightly better than you, and their children will do better than them. And the world will live in peace and harmony. Global warming will be solved. World hunger will be solved. Sexual liberation will be resolved. Everybody will be happy. We'll have a woman president. Then we'll have a black president. Then we'll have a gay woman black president. And then the world will even be better and better and better. As long as we can continue to get rid of this negativity. Al, welcome to the Savage Nation on WOR. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Mike. Thank you very much.
Did you like my homily on things are getting better?
That, you are the best, sir. I definitely want to thank you for your contributions to radio.
You know, but you see, Al, here's the problem. I think you have to be a cynical New Yorker like you to even understand me. I'm starting to think that people don't even understand sarcasm and such in this world.
Yeah, I want to say thank you. I am respectful, and I am thankful for your contributions to radio and American airwaves. You tell it like it is. And most importantly, I think, like the caller that was there before wanting, or I should say callers who wanted all those positive messages,
yes.
I think they're not ready. Most of the American public is not ready for the bitter medicine that the doctor is dispensing. They're just not ready.
Well, I don't sugarcoat the message. That's true.
You know, the problem is...
I mean, when I get up in the morning and I read that Bush wants twice the funding for AIDS in Africa, and the guy is like an insane asylum. He's like an insane asylum with pants. The country's bankrupt or going broke. The guy's printing money like there's no tomorrow. What is he, nuts? Where is the $30 billion going to come from, I ask myself?
Yeah, that's the thing, that everybody in America, I mean, some people in America just don't want to look at the truth, and they don't want to do, see, what you do on radio is you wax philosophical and do some self-analysis, and that's what, unfortunately, too many Americans don't do with themselves.
Oh, you mean the self-analysis is very difficult to do. It's a lifetime. It's a lifetime of training, which permits me to analyze self and still function in the present. It's not easy to do. I got to tell you, Al, it's pretty risky. No, most people are afraid to look within. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they just...
I mean, I've looked within and don't... I don't want to tell you, deceive you into thinking everything I see is so wonderful. You know? It is what it is. That's all. I am what I am. And I have to take myself as I am made, not as I wish I were. But Bush wants twice the funding for AIDS. This is amazing to me. CIA claims hackers have broken into power systems' computers and threatened to cut off electricity to entire cities unless they're paid a ransom. That's the CIA. You could say it's a scare tactic, or you could say it's probably true. Muslim opening prayer at Iowa State House sets off alarm bells when somebody actually heard what he said in Arabic. Is that racism if somebody actually analyzed what the Muslim imam said? Of course it isn't. It's called a reasonable concern with a suspicious imam such as this. Report, North Korea to sell mini-subs to Iran. Shall I look at that in a positive manner? So show me the positive in that story. Let us give you another story that I put up on the website. Soros Nation, hedge fund operator controlling Democratic politicians and the media. Is there something positive in that? Hypothetical attack on the United States outlined by China in their military textbooks. Is there something positive in that I've missed? Homeowners ordered to cut down redwoods because the trees blocked their neighbor's solar panel. Is there something positive in that? Illinois Democrats close to Barack Obama are saying he will appoint the shyster con man lawyer, John Edwards, to be the Attorney General of the United States should he, by God forsake us all, should he become president. Can you imagine this? Could you imagine the irony of a shyster lawyer like Edwards becoming Attorney General? Can you imagine that? That would be like Al Sharpton becoming head of the Department of Education. That would be like, well, I can go down the list. I don't even want to make jokes about this.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I drive into the city, go to this Chinese restaurant. Now, for one, the parking is enough to give you indigestion if you get there. And it's terrible, just awful. That already gives you indigestion. There's no point in going. So I get there. I've eaten there for 20 years, and they still mistreat us. It's just that I don't know if it's a nature of the business. They don't like me. It's racism. I don't know what it is. I can't tell. I get in there, I order a number of dishes, and I'm meeting a friend, and they bring us immediately the pot stickers and the steamed dim sum within 5 minutes. I said, well, tonight's going to be different. Now, I'm three beers into the meal, and there are no dishes, and everyone who came in after me is eating. Eight times I get up, where's the food? Then they bring it out, and the rice is at the end, it was a mess, okay, a nightmare. I'm never going there again, but wait, the best is yet to come. My friend John, who's a philosophy professor, shows up a few minutes late, and he comes and he says, I had to park in a driveway around the corner, I hope I don't get a ticket. So right away, that's double anxiety. I don't blame him. There's no parking. Then he runs out 5 minutes later. And he puts a note in his windshield which says, please don't tell me. Call my cell phone number if you want me to move. Sure enough, in the middle of the meal, ring, ring. Oh, I'll be right out. I'll be right out. So I go out with him because John is a philosophy professor and he's not street smart. I just had an instinct I better be with him. Sure enough, there's a crazed Russian in the street. He had parked not only in the guy's driveway, but right against the guy's bumper, and the Russian is insanely mad, screaming and yelling, you have no brains! No brains! No brains! No brains! Stupid, stupid, stupid brain! No brains! What, you have no brains? Why are you parking my car? And he's crazy. He's livid. Now, I know how to defuse street situations, and John, the philosophy professor, doesn't know anything about this kind of interchange. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. I'm trying to calm things down. I had had four beers already. So I said to him, look, tell you what, just calm down. You have no brains. No. And he's screaming and yelling the Russian. No brains. Stupid. And he's in everyone's face. So I said, this could escalate, turn very bad. You know, guns, knives. You don't know what's going to. Crazy relatives from the Ukraine could come out with tattoos from jail. You don't know where this is going to go. I'm trying to defuse it. So I'm saying to my friend, look. Back the car up. I said, if there's any damage, I will pay you. I figured money talks, right? I wasn't saying it was anyone's fault. No brains. I don't care. Damage. No brains. No brains. And he's on and on with the no brains. I said, look, my friend is a philosophy professor. I don't care. No brains. Why on my car? So I said, John, back the car up. John backs the car up, and there's no damage whatsoever. So the Russian gets down on his knees. And he says, no brains, stupid, no brains anyway, I don't care, damage, no damage, stupid, no brains. So I said, look, is there damage? If there's damage, I'll pay. No brains, stupid, stupid man. I said, look, is there damage? And I'm saying, John, get in the car and get out of here. I'm going to take care of it. Go. And John doesn't go. John sits there and starts in with the guy, I want to see you smile. I said, oh, my God. Now, the worst nightmare. You're telling an enraged Russian to smile? What does he think? This is a textbook in Marin County? He wants to see a smile out of an enraged Russian. He parked on his bumper. You know what that's like? That's like pulling out your private part and pressing it against his wife's jeans in the street. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? All right, look. I understand people expose themselves when drunk in Russia, but you don't touch wife's pants with private part. You'll get killed for this. I mean, it's the equivalent of, what are you parking against the guy's bumper for? It's bad enough to be in the driveway, but if you're going to park there, you don't put it on the guy's bumper. It was like a new car and little, and it looks like the guy worked all his life for his first new car. And to him, this was like a sexual encounter. It's like, all right, in my country, I know they get drunk and they pull it out, but they don't touch wife's pants.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.